convene the March 20, 2017 meeting of the House Subcommittee on Natural Resources of the Ways and Means Joint Committee. This is going to be, you're free. This is going to be a very interesting day. Since I think virtually the entire subcommittee is leaving to go testify elsewhere, including myself. So I don't know how to handle this kind of situation since I literally do not have a subcommittee and I myself am leaving shortly. So if everyone would please remain flexible, I would be most appreciative. So with that, I am...
I can listen on behalf of everybody, and then I'm sure everybody will watch this tape later.
Representative Power and I will make sure that your comments are well received. So with that, I'd like to open a public hearing on Senate Bill 5510-5510, the Columbia River Gorge Commission. Mr. Rocco, would you please give us a little background?
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. So the Columbia River Gorge Commission is here today for their public hearing on their proposed budget for the 2017-19 biennium. The materials have been posted on OLIS, the LFO budget review, the governor's budget document, the Gorge Commission's presentation material, and the Department of Administrative Services presentation. Since most of the material in the LFO budget review is going to be covered by the agency, I'm not going to go through that. I'd just like to make a couple of statements. However, the Gorge Commission is a rather unique agency. It's a regional agency created through an interstate compact between Oregon and Washington, which gives it a rather unique flavor because based on that compact, the agreement is the states of Oregon and Washington will jointly share in an equal amount the operational expenses of the commission. And this causes some amount of coordination between the legislatures during the session because in Washington, we have to communicate with the Washington legislature to see what level of funding they are proposing and let them know what level we're proposing. Most of the numbers you see are a combined total, so that combined total is not what has to be matched. It's only the operational side of that. And the other component of the budget are the commissioner expenses, which are the second budget structure of the agency. So what this means is we often have to make adjustments in through the emergency board or in the next session in order to even up if one agency happens to or one state happens to provide more resources than the other state. So there is a fair amount of that kind of coordination activity that has to go on. So with that, I think the agency is ready to make their presentation.
Thank you very much. With that, I'd like to call forward, please, Christina Wolniakowski, Bowen Blair, and Dan Erickson. And if you have anyone else that I didn't call, that will be fine, too. Good afternoon to each of you. Welcome to our subcommittee. And again, many apologies for all of us who will be running in and out of the hearing here today. I sincerely apologize, but flexibility is the rule of the day here. So
sure.
Welcome.
Well, we appreciate it. Thank you, Mr. Co-Chair Witt, members of the subcommittee. My name is Bowen Blair. I'm a Portland resident. I'm chair of the Gorge Commission, serving my second term. I was first appointed by Governor Kitzhaber and then by Governor Brown. And with me today is Dan Erickson, a fellow commissioner, a National Scenic Area resident, a cherry grower from Wasco County, and former county commissioner for Wasco County also. Also appointed by the two governors. And Christina Wolniakowski, who is our executive director, is just finishing up her second year as the Gorge Commission's executive director. Pryor was the regional director for the National Fish and Wildlife Foundation in Portland for 14 years.
My goodness.
And I suspect she'll be the only person testifying before you this week who has received the highest award given for international cooperation. I didn't tell her I was going to say this, from the president of Poland for her work in Poland, post-communist Poland. And for those of you who know the Gorge Commission and our bi-state relationship with Washington, I can't think of a more befitting honor for the executive director of the commission. But I've had the pleasure of being involved with Gorge Matters for 35 years now, including helping drafting and passing the National Scenic Area Act through Congress, getting the signature by President Reagan, and then through the Bi-State Compact through the Oregon and Washington state legislatures in the mid-1980s. And based on that history, I'd like to make three brief points. The first is our current budget is 12% less when adjusted for inflation than it was 30 years ago when the Gorge Commission was first formed in 1987. And it's a little bit over a third more than independent experts at the Mark Hatfield School of Government at PSU and their equivalent, the Dan Evans School up at University of Washington, have said that is really needed for us to do our job. There have been new challenges, some not anticipated since the Act was passed, including climate change, which really wasn't on the radar screen in the mid-1980s, which threatens the Gorge world-class natural, cultural, and recreational resources, and has made wildfires a pretty common occurrence in the Gorge. I saw statistics the other day that indicated over the past 10 years we've averaged a wildfire about every other month. And as you know, the Forest Service is our partnership agency in the Gorge, and it's now spending more than 50% of its budget nationally on fighting wildfires. So that's a significant change for us in the Gorge. Another challenge is a mile-long fossil fuel trains. They are carrying uncovered coal and volatile oil, including one that derailed and caught fire in Mosier last summer, which I know you heard about. And we were lucky during that derailment because while the several trains caught fire, there were no winds. And for those of you who are familiar with the Gorge, on a summer day, you typically have about 40-mile-an-hour winds. So we were lucky there wasn't a significant conflagration. And then the third challenge is significant regional population growth. We've seen a growth regionally around the Gorge of over 50% just in the period from 1990 to 2010. So that's put significant pressure on, among other things, our recreation resources. If you've driven up the scenic highway in the summer, you not only cannot park, but you see cars literally lined for miles from all the people who are using the trails in the Gorge. So that's created, in turn, significant pressures. So we're seeing these increased pressures at a time when our budget is diminishing. Much of our management plan, which is a guiding document for how we look at land use in the Gorge, is 30 years old and doesn't address these pressures. So our funding needs in the Gorge are particularly acute now as we embark upon our review of the management plan. The management plan is required by the National Scenic Area Act to be reviewed every 10 years. And we're going through that review now. The last review was actually 12 years ago and was completed by a much larger commission staff, a staff of 10 people, as opposed to our current commission staff of 6. So in conclusion, the Gorge Commission has diverse backgrounds and perspectives. It's a 13-member commission. Half of the members, 6, are appointed by the 6 counties, half, 6, by the 2 states, and the other is a representative from the Forest Service appointed by the Secretary of Agriculture. And we all share, and this wasn't always true, a desire to confront these large issues facing the Gorge, whether impacting the scenic, natural, cultural, recreation values, or its economic values. We have the will, we have the skills, we just need adequate funding. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much.
Good afternoon, Chairman Witt, members of the subcommittee. For the record, my name is Christina Volniakovsky, and I'm the Executive Director of the Columbia River Gorge Commission. And I wanted to take this opportunity today to talk about the National Scenic Area, what we do as an agency, what are some of the budget drivers, the things that influence our need for funding, what our current budget is and what we've been able to accomplish out of the 2015-17 biennial budget, but also, as Chairman Blair mentioned, what are some of the opportunities and challenges moving forward, and then finally what our budget request is and why we're asking for a little bit of additional funding for this next biennium. So when we think about the National Scenic Area being right there on the back step of the Portland and Vancouver urban area, it's really 85 miles of the Columbia River heading to the east from the Sandy River Delta all the way out to the Dalles, and it does cover both sides of the river for Oregon and Washington. It's 292,500 acres of very diverse habitats and 13 urban areas. So when the National Scenic Area was established, the 13 urban areas that are in the National Scenic Area are exempt from Columbia River Gorge Commission responsibilities, but we work very closely with each of those communities. It's also divided up into two separate areas, the general management area, which are different land use designations, and the special management areas that include some federal lands that the Forest Service oversees in terms of any permit applications. So when the National Scenic Area Act was passed in 1986 by President Reagan, the first priority was to make sure that the scenic values of the Columbia River Gorge would be protected in perpetuity. In addition, the natural resources, the cultural resources, more than 10,000 years of tribal residents, and then also the recreational. In addition to that, the second purpose, though, was to also look at economic opportunities and how to support the economy in the urban areas, but then have economic development outside those urban areas compatible with the first purposes of the Act. That was a very important consideration. So it's really two parts of the Act, the protection of the resources and also the support of the economic vitality of the whole region. So when it was passed as a bi-state effort, Oregon and Washington entered into a bi-state compact where they agreed to equally fund the purposes of the commission moving forward. And so each biennium, both states look at the budget needs for the commission and determine how much funding we need in order to fulfill the purposes of the Act. In the end, the mission of the agency is as a land use management agency to make sure that the National Scenic Area Act is implemented. As Chairman Blair mentioned, we cover six counties, three in Washington and three in Oregon. And with these county governments, we work very closely with each of those six counties. Five of the counties have adopted the National Scenic Area Management Plan, and one of them, Klickitat County, did not, and so we serve as the permitting agency for Klickitat County on the Washington side. In the general management area, the land uses are what really drive the rules and regulations and policies in our management plan. What you can do in open space or how you can develop in agriculture or in rural residential or industrial areas, those were all developed back in 1986 when they were thinking about how to best implement the purposes of the Act and how to protect the scenic vistas while still allowing economic activities, farming, agriculture, and some amount of commercial activity to occur. So to govern this National Scenic Area Act, we, as Chairman Blair mentioned, we have 13 commissioners. And this is a really important aspect of the way that we're governed, because we have the three governor appointees from Oregon and three from Washington that really have the state's interests, combined with the local interests from the appointees of each of the counties. The county representatives really represent their county interests, but they also are thinking about the gorge as a whole and how to make sure that the county's interests and the Act are implemented in coordination. We often meet with the different county commissions on a quarterly basis in each of the counties in order to give them updates of what it is that we're working on and how some of the policies that we have in terms of the management plan, how they impact the counties, and how we can help support their economic vitality plans. So as I mentioned, the management plan is really our guiding document. It is the document that really says what you can and can't do in the National Scenic Area in order to implement the purposes of the Act. Once that management plan was approved, and the first one was approved in 1991, each of the counties had an opportunity to adopt that plan and create ordinances that would be compatible with that plan. So the county planners in each of those five counties that adopted it, when they receive permit applications, they review them in terms of the management plan and then issue the permits. However, the Gorge Commission staff also have an opportunity to review those county permit applications and make comments on them, and that is actually one of our performance measures, how well we do in terms of reviewing those county permit applications and what kinds of comments we make and how those are taken into consideration. Klickitat County, as I mentioned, had not adopted the ordinance, so we serve as that, as the permitting authority there, and currently that that's a fairly large workload. One of the aspects of the management plan is that it does have to be reviewed every 10 years and revised as needed. So we are 2 years overdue with that process due to some changes at the commission, but we have embarked on that, and that has been in addition to our normal workload of doing permit reviews. One of the other aspects of the National Scenic Area Act, which is very important to us, is that we engage with the four treaty tribes, and we actively engage with them, and we need to do more of that because they are a sovereign government, and we serve as a government-to-government consultation with any of the policies and procedures or rules that we adopt. Our region is rapidly developing. As Chairman Blair mentioned, we have many more visitors now. It was 2.5 million, I believe, in 2016. We were listed as one of the top six destinations in the world to visit, and we were appointed by the Travel Oregon as one of the seven wonders. This has created an amazing opportunity for people to come and visit. They hike, they recreate, they enjoy the vistas, they go to the local communities and spend money in the different restaurants, and hopefully there is a really good economic boost from that. But it has posed a number of different challenges in that there's a lot of congestion, a lot of traffic issues, there's safety. There have been a lot of rescues that have happened this last summer from people that have not always employed the best recreational safety standards. So it has increased the amount of response that's necessary from local safety officials. But when we think about the other things that we need to consider in terms of our own budget, it's really just the staff. We have right now six full-time staff and two and a half planners, one GIS expert, an attorney and myself, and a financial analyst. And to cover the work that we need to do with all the development reviews, as well as keeping tabs of everything that is happening in the Gorge, as well as trying to plan for the future, it has been a bit of a challenge for us. We have been asked many times to serve on several different committees. Because of our unique nature as a bi-state agency, we can really bridge both Oregon and Washington and look at the region in a holistic way and try to help with coordinating Oregon and Washington issues to make sure that both sides are considering different options. So just recently we were requested by the ports and the Department of Transportation in Oregon and Washington to look at how to improve some of the regional strategic planning for transportation, look at different transit options, look at how to actually help support some of the requests for the Bridge of the Gods and the Hood River Bridge to help them access some additional funding. And so we served in a role of helping to coordinate these meetings and serve as the liaison between the National Scenic Area and our policies and procedures and what is needed in terms of the regional area to further develop. Some of the external and external environmental and external factors affecting our budget needs is the climate change adaptation. As Chairman Blair said, we have many more wildfires. There's a lot of pressure in terms of how to manage the forests in the current climate situation. There's increased fossil fuel transportation. There's a lot of public interest and concern about the increasing number of fossil fuel trains that are coming through the gorge, and especially the impact on the National Scenic Area. County planning capacity needs to be considered, because without those county planners, we would not be able to keep up with all the development applications that are submitted for people looking to do whatever changes, whether it's to build a house, to build accessory units, to put in vineyards and develop new agricultural industries in the gorge area. And finally, one of the budget drivers for us is the fact that both Oregon and Washington do need to fund us equally. And we work with both legislatures as closely as we can, both governor's offices. We really try to be equal in terms of how we work with both states. So in terms of our current biennial budget, each state provided approximately $920,000 to support our six staff. And as I mentioned, we have an executive director, me, the budget analyst, our 2.5 land use planners and the GIS expert, and then we have a compact law attorney. And this position has been very critical for us because compact law supersedes state law. And so there are many situations where we really need to look at how that compact law really influences some of the decisions that we make. In terms of our organization, again, it's a pretty flat, we're a small agency, pretty flat structure. But we're hoping to add one more position to our staff that will particularly help us with increased engagement with the four treaty tribes. Our budget history, as Chairman Blair had mentioned, has been, we were up to 10 staff already from 2001 to 2009, and that's when the last management plan review process happened. From 2000 to 2004, we had 10 staff working on it in addition to our normal workload. At this point, we're taking it on. It took 4 years to do it then. This time, we're taking it on and trying to do it in 2.5 years and trying to do it with six staff. We've already started the process, but we're looking forward to how we can manage both our normal responsibilities as well as taking on the plan, of which most of it is 30 years old. There's only been a few chapters that have been updated in the last 2004 review process. So what did we actually accomplish out of our 2015 budget, 2015-17 biennial budget? Well, one of the things that I'm proudest of, and very quickly in the last year, we were able to finally finalize after 30 years what the urban area boundaries are. Now, you may think that that is a basic premise of a national scenic area to know exactly where the urban areas are, but you have to think back to when the act was passed in 1986. We had paper maps. We didn't really have GIS systems at that time that were as sophisticated as they are now. And so those lines around the urban areas and around the exterior of the national scenic area were really drawn with magic markers and were generally depicted. So what we were able to do in the last couple of years is to get these surveyed and have very precise legal descriptions, because that is absolutely critical to know if there's ever going to be any kind of adjustments, that you need to know exactly where those urban areas are and what can be done in an urban area versus outside in a general management area or a special management area are different. So having that that precise legal description has been critical to accomplish, and we just passed the rule in February of this year. We are proceeding to do the exterior boundary as well as the boundary between the general management area and the special management area. That'll be finished hopefully by June of this year. And so finally, the entire scenic area will be identified and the boundaries clearly approved. We've also reduced the amount of time that we've been able to review the Klickitat County permits. As I had mentioned, we're the actual permitting agency for that county. When we receive those applications in, they take an extraordinary amount of time to go through and do our due diligence, prepare the staff reports, make sure that we have considered every aspect of the rules, and then we work with the applicants because we really want to help them. We want to make sure that they can do what they need to do in terms of building their house, but it just has to be done with the National Scenic Area standards. So we try to do a lot of communication with the landowners and try to be as helpful as possible, but these things take time. In the we're trying to reduce it down to 6 months per permit. But in addition to that, once a permit is issued, you still have the post-permitting compliance that's necessary, and that is also a part of the life cycle of a permit application. We are required to do IT security measures, and we have passed those for both Oregon and Washington. We just had a five-year financial audit of our not only our finances but also programmatic, and we received a five-star review on that with no findings. In addition to that, we just launched our management plan review process, and we're doing it this in a very public, very inclusive manner. We've finished three large public listening sessions. We've met with all the county commissions. We've met with 11 of the 13 urban area city councils. We've met with the agencies where we have joint programs with the Department of Transportation, with Parks, with Oregon Department of Fish and Wildlife and DLCD, Oregon Department of Forestry. We're trying to consult with all the agencies because it's important for us to understand what is working and what needs to be improved. And you can only do that when you have one-on-one meetings with the agencies and look at where have we actually made progress and what are some of the unforeseen circumstances that we have now that we didn't have 30 years ago when these rules were written. So we're doing quite a bit of that outreach, and we're hoping that by June of this year, we'll have a list, a comprehensive list of all the public comments and agency comments compiled to be able to then look at what are the issues we really need to focus on in the next 2 years of our review process. Oftentimes we're asked, what is it that we do in terms of the second purpose of the Act, in terms of helping to support the economic vitality of the region? And so far, one of the major ways we do it is that there's a Oregon Investment Board and a Washington Investment Board that were established through the National Scenic Area Act and the Bi-State Compact. They were appropriated $8.1 million to serve for seed loans and grants to help businesses get started in throughout the National Scenic Area in those counties that adopted the ordinance. And so far, out of that $8.1 million, it's been a revolving program so that we've actually put over $20 million because of interest and repayment back into those communities. And so we serve as the final sign-off on any of those loans and grants, and have an excellent working relationship with both the Mid-Columbia Council Economic Development District, as well as with, on the Washington side, the Economic Development Council. So we've been very active with them, and we are now starting a whole new process of looking at economic indicators. What are the things that we should be looking at in the National Scenic Area that help tell us how well we're doing economically, just like we have indicators that help tell us what scenic values are being protected, how are they being impacted, and that's all part of what we call our Vital Sign Indicators program. So in terms of our key performance measures, we have four for the Oregon, and we have three on the Washington side. These performance measures, I'll just go through these because they need some explanation the way that they're written. The first one is county decisions, the percentage and number of county decisions where Gorge Commission comments were addressed in the decision, either fully or partially. And our target is 75%. Anytime a county sends us a development review, we take a look at it. If we log it in, and last year we had maybe 100 of them total, we log them in, and then we look at what are the resources that could be potentially impacted, and then we, if it looks like the county has covered it completely, then we don't need to make any comments to them. However, if there's something that we notice that they need to consider more thoroughly, we will write a comment letter to them, and then they will take that into consideration. So in terms of the ones that we reviewed during this last year, the reason why we don't have any data yet for that is because some of those decisions have not been actually made yet. And so we need to follow up with those counties to do a better accounting on which ones from the comments. I think we submitted 10 comments total. 10 comment letters total last year, and how those were actually implemented in the any decisions that were made. Also, the percentage of development reviews that are issued in the required time frame. This is really only applicable to Klickitat County. Again, these it's a little bit hard to distinguish between the Oregon and Washington performance measures, but the 30% really is that we need to speed up the way that we do the timeline for the development reviews, but with only 2.5 planners on our staff, sometimes it takes a little bit longer to get to all the reviews that we need to do. So we're working on that. We hope that with an additional position in the next biennium that we'll be able to actually hit our target. Customer service, percentage of customers rating their satisfaction with our customer service as good or excellent. Our target is we hope 3/4 of the people are happy with the way that they've interacted with us. And according to our statistics, we still have a little bit of work to do on that. And most of the time, if we do have a less than perfect customer service score, it's just because of timelines that we are doing the best we can to address the needs of the applicants in a timely way, but that with the amount of work that we do, sometimes we can't issue the decisions as quickly as we would like, but 71% isn't too bad, but we will strive to do better. And then finally, the percent of total best practices met by the board or the commission in our case, and we actually do this through a survey of our commissioners, and we reached 100% during this last biennium, so we're very happy about that one. I wanted to just very quickly go through this urban area legal descriptions example, because there's been a lot of interest in our 13 urban areas and those boundaries, and a lot of questions of whether those boundaries will at any point be expanded to accommodate any additional development. And so I wanted to just show this example, and I apologize that it's not real easy to see this, but the way the legal descriptions were developed is through angle points. And essentially with the DALs, which was one of the ones that we heard the most about in terms of this final decisions on the urban area boundaries, is that it followed the urban growth boundary. And there was some concern that it didn't, but in fact, when we finished up the legal descriptions, it followed the urban growth boundary almost to a T. So we, in any places where there was a boundary that cut through a private parcel, where a house was in the urban area and the backyard was in open space, we were able to do a minor adjustment and include the entire parcel in there. So just in terms of the management plan update, with such a treasure, 85 miles of the river and 292,500 acres. There's a very diverse habitats and very diverse amount of use, as well as the in-lieu fishing sites for the four treaty tribes. And so to try to balance all those and have rules, regulations, policies that really fully protect the those resources, it takes some time and effort to compare and contrast each of those to make sure that we're following the National Scenic Area Act's intent. And so when we looked at the standards for the management plan originally, looking at how we can protect and enhance our agricultural lands and our forest lands, you know, it's a national scenic area. We did not want to have major developments, especially in the special management areas. We wanted to prohibit industrial areas, development outside of the urban areas, and really focus it in the urban areas to make sure that there's enough room for doing that kind of industrial development within the national scenic area, but in keeping it restricted to the urban areas. We also wanted to require that the commercial, residential, and mining operations take place without adversely affecting any of those resources, such as the scenic, the cultural, recreation, and natural. So right now we're in the scoping phase. It's really pretty much the very early phase of this review, where we are identifying the issues based on the conversations we've had with the county commissions, with the city planners, with county planners, the state agencies, and the tribes, and looking at what are the issues that we really need to focus on, and then eventually identifying which are the most critical ones, and then revising those policies, rules, and regulations to accommodate any new findings and new science that we can bring into our work. So this is just the life cycle of our management plan, looking at our goals and objectives, how we create our policies and guidelines, what does the implementation look like, and then finally monitoring and analysis. And this is an area that we need to do more work on. If someone was to ask, well, is the National Scenic Area more ecologically diverse now than it was 30 years ago because of protections in place? Well, we'd have to rely on our agency partners, but there hasn't been a steady monitoring program that has that we've been able to really marshal and compile that information and present it. So we created this program called the Vital Sign Indicators Program back in 2009, which was a very robust effort to identify 51 different criteria that we could evaluate over time, develop monitoring plans, and then be able to answer the question, how are we doing? Are we protecting the National Scenic Area, and are we contributing to economic vitality of the region? So that stalled out in 2010, however, because we went from the 10 staff down to 6 staff, and other priorities took place, just doing our day-to-day work. However, we have resuscitated our vital signs program, and we're hoping to use this whole management plan review process to be able to identify really what criteria do we need to have in place now so that 10 years from now, as we go through the next version of the management plan, we'll actually be able to have more data, more monitoring information, and more analysis to help us make decisions that will need to be made 10 years from now. So this timeline that I'm showing you, you don't need to actually look so much at the tiny letters, but it's really demonstrating. That's why I have colors up there, just to show you the different aspects of the review process during this phase from November of last year until June of this year. The different colors represent the different types of activities that were doing in order to do a thorough review of the management plan. And it includes doing all the public outreach, the agency outreach, outreach with the tribes, being able to do workshops with our commissioners so that they are fully aware of all the public comments that we've received, and then including additional public hearings this spring once we identify what are the priority issues we really want to work on in the next several years. So then once we identify those priority issues, we're going to do a deep dive and work with our partners the nonprofit groups, the agencies, anyone who's got the information that we will need to be able to really review, analyze, and hopefully improve some of the policies and rules and regulations that we have. So the plan is that by June of 2019, our Gorge 2020 plan will be completed. And once the commission approves the next version of the plan, which has to address the issues we have today, but also be visionary for the next 10 years, it will go to the Secretary of Agriculture for concurrence. So we're nicknaming this the Gorge 2020 plan because we're really hoping that by January 1st, 2020, we will have a plan that will guide at least the next decade in the Gorge. So in terms of our budget request, we have a pretty modest budget. Our base budget, as I mentioned, was about approximately $920,000 from each state that supported six FTE. We have seven authorized, but we didn't have enough funding to complete seven. We have one vacant position, which is an administrative analyst, someone who would do the day-to-day administrative work. Right now, our financial budget analyst is doing both jobs, but we do need some administrative support, but we're not really asking for that. What we're asking for in terms of this next biennium is a $125,000 increase that would help us secure another position and have some funding to really do much more in terms of engaging with treaty tribes on a government-to-government consultation process. Since much of what we do really needs to have their involvement, we need to have a dedicated part of a dedicated person to be able to help us do that, someone who will be available to work with each of those tribes. In addition, that additional funding would help us develop and relaunch our vital sign indicators program so that 10 years from now, we'll actually have more monitoring information and a much better view of the challenges ahead and how to measure whether we're doing what we needed to do in terms of protecting the National Scenic Area. So our overall request is $1,106,478. And that will cover this additional funding that we need for the tribal outreach. We still have a very flat organization, but what I've done is I've reorganized it a little bit more into departments where we have an actual administration, and hopefully we'll be able to secure a little bit of extra funding for some administrative assistance. You'll see that we have the planning department, which will have three FTE, one of which is vacant with the tribal liaison vital sign indicators planner, our legal counsel, and then our information analysis. We have now a new GIS planner who is really one of the best in the country. We recruited him nationally, and the capability that we will now have to be able to provide information to landowners, to counties, to agencies will be extraordinary. Certainly we'll have a much better capability than we've ever had before. So in terms of the our goals for the next biennium is really to increase our investments in being able to plan for the future of the Gorge and have the data and the analysis and the information needed to be able to put together a really sound plan. We want to do much more with agency coordination in Oregon and in Washington. Through our public outreach meetings that we've had just in the last 2 months and the individual agency meetings, there were many comments that we received about how important it is that we have very proactive contact with those agencies to make sure that there's a really good understanding of the rules in the National Scenic Area, as well as for us to understand some of the challenges that the agencies have when they are trying to conduct their work in the National Scenic Area. As I mentioned earlier, we're looking at developing economic indicators. What really makes sense to measure in the National Scenic Area in terms of economic vitality? We know that there are companies like In Situ that have located in the gorge because of the quality of life, because of the resources, because the people who work there want to enjoy the gorge, but they also felt like there's really good infrastructure there to be able to have an excellent business. There have been many more businesses that have located in the gorge just because of it being a national scenic area. But because of that, you know, we need to really look at what kinds of economic vitality, new economic initiatives really are compatible with the scenic area. We do want to improve and streamline our commission functions. We're looking at new ways of doing our work, increasing our efficiency, so not having as much of a time lag in doing the review of those developments, permit applications, and doing the reviews. We want to have more consistent interpretation of the rules for all the county planners, because we have five counties that all have developed their ordinances. Hopefully they're all consistent, but we need to make sure that there's really good communication and frequent meetings with our county planners. And as I said, finally, to implement the vital sign indicators so that we can monitor the health of the gorge in the next decade. Our request for additional $125,000 for the vital sign indicators and treaty tribe engagement. And then another package is a commissioner's fund to help support our Oregon commissioners. And at this point, I'd like to turn it over to Commissioner Dan Erickson from the Dalles to talk a little bit about his involvement on our commission and the importance for having a little extra funding to help with the engagement of the commissioners.
Co-Chair Frederick, Co-Chair Witt, I know you're here in spirit. Committee members, thank you for this opportunity. I didn't know I was going to be set up like this with that as my first topic, but since it is, I will go straight into that. I quite often attend extra meetings, the extra meetings we've been having for public outreach. I very seldom turn in travel for those meetings, because our budget doesn't really support travel beyond our regularly scheduled meetings. It's vitally important for our ability to communicate and to do outreach to the communities and the people of the Gorge, to get our message across as to what we're doing and to be able to hear from them as to the needs of the communities. So I would urge you to support the package 101 for the extra commissioner travel support. I'm a cherry grower from the Dalles. I've been doing that for a little over 40 years. Time has flown by rather quickly. I was recently appointed to my second term on the Gorge Commission, but prior to that, my experience, I was on county planning committees, Board of Adjustment, Planning Commission, County Commissioner, and the last 8 years I served as County Judge and County Administrator for Wasco County, a total of about 32 years. In that time, I had to go through some really tough budget constraints on our county, and we had to make cuts. I think we made cuts in personnel all 8 years I served as county judge, so I understand what the state is going through right now, and it's difficult to make decisions on funding. The Gorge Commission has struggled with funding for a long time, and some of the practical issues that we face that the funding is critical to us for. One, we are challenged continuously about promoting economic development in the Gorge. The naysayers in the Gorge that don't like the Gorge Commission feel like the commissioners don't support economic development. However, the second purpose of the Act says we will support economic development, not promote it. And in supporting it, tourism and recreation have mushroomed in the Gorge. It is one of the leading economic profitability, not profitability, but growth industries that we have now in the gorge. It is largely due to the National Scenic Area and the protections that have been put in place. As Director Walniakowski mentioned, in situ, sited in the gorge, partly because of the protections. I was, as county judge, able to negotiate the enterprise zone agreement with Google when they located in the Dalles. And we suggested to them that we had recently proclaimed Appalachian. We had an amphitheater winery that did big name entertainment every night. Every weekend night in the summer, we had skiing, we had windsurfing, and above that, we had protections in the gorge. That meant that all of those benefits were going to remain there in perpetuity, and it wasn't going to become a paved-over industrial site. And then the mayor of the Dalles, who was negotiating with me, said, "But that isn't important to you." They almost came out of their chairs. They said, "Absolutely. That's what we're looking at." So that is how Google ended up in the Port of the Dalles. And the protections in the gorge are making it a very, very attractive site for economic development to occur. Businesses, industries, and people that want to recreate are looking at the Columbia River Gorge as an ideal place. We need your support, because we only get 50% of our funding from you. From a practical matter, the amount of money that you're willing to put up to our budget is a leverage for Washington to match. Since you make the first cut, we really need your support to be able to get the same amount of money from Washington. It's really tough negotiating with two states at the same time for funding. And whichever state goes first sets the bar. It will not be any higher than that. So if we don't get funding we need coming out of Oregon, we're not going to get it out of Washington. And so it's vitally important to us to be able to use the funding we get as leverage to maintain our budget. It's the best deal you'll get as a legislative body, because you're getting two for one. Every dollar you give us, we get another dollar for. So we would urge you to support us just from the ability of us to continue to leverage dollars from Washington. And thirdly, we need the support for staffing, adequate staffing, which we've never really had adequate staffing, because we never know what's coming at us. Right now, we are receiving an appeal from the Union Pacific, a railroad who's trying to site additional siting at Mosier. And you've probably heard about that case. It's being highly contested by the railroad. We, I think, are currently being appealed to the Ninth Circuit Court of Appeals. Legal fees are going to be significant, but from staff time and from commissioner's time, just to give you an idea of what we're looking at, the record that we will be reviewing is 14,000 pages. So those kinds of things take away from management plan review, vital signs indicators, application processing, all the things that we do on a normal basis that we establish our budget for. Then you get an additional large thing thrown on your plate that you have to address. And you have to do it with the budget that you have. So having adequate staff to be handling those kinds of things is vitally important to us. I think I applied to be a gorge commissioner 20 years ago from the county appointee. And at the time, there was an attorney that was applying, and he actually got appointed. And at the time, the county judge was rationalized the decision to pick the attorney with this statement that, well, who is the commission more likely to listen to, an attorney or a farmer? So I'm just a farmer from the Dalles asking you to help fund us. Thank you.
Any questions? I have a couple. First of all, I'd trust a farmer any day before I would an attorney. I know. Now, if he hits me, it's on camera. On land use, you talk about land use in the gorge. Is it any different or than our land use in the state of Oregon? And if so, how does that determine? Well, everybody jump up there once.
Okay, I'll take the first stab at it. Yes, it's different because it is more restrictive in most cases. Most of the restrictions deal with scenic and cultural types of resources. In order to protect the scenic beauty of the gorge, development that negatively impacts the scenic view from key viewing areas is restricted. And because of the key viewing areas, the whole gorge scenic area was rezoned under Gorge Act rules under the Bi-State Commission. Some of those are very, very similar to Oregon land use. Some are significantly different, and it depends on the location. For example, one of the issues that we're trying to deal with in our periodic review, which is very near and dear to my heart because I worked hard with the City of the Dalles when they tried to expand their urban growth boundary. Urban growth boundaries have a defined process to go through to expand per Oregon law. The National Scenic Area currently does not have a defined process to do an urban growth boundary expansion. Therefore, nobody currently is able to do an urban growth boundary expansion. Other than that, colors of houses that are developed are that you can build a house in many areas, but you have to make sure that it's not highly visible. So color schemes, reflectivity, lighting are controlled by scenic area rules so that they don't become offensive to the public. Now,
Representative Esquivel, if I could respond too. When we started the drive for legislation in 1980, it was primarily an Oregon-based drive. Oregon had strong land use planning. Washington did not. Skamania County, which has half the land on the Washington side, did not have a zoning ordinance. So we patterned, to a large extent, the restrictions in the National Scenic Area after Oregon law. For instance, there was an effort to drive growth to urban areas, a type of growth that would be commercial growth, industrial growth, and to protect the agriculture forest lands. That's very similar, of course, to Oregon law. It was a significant change for Washington, though. So I think there are real similarities between the National Scenic Area Act and what Oregon did in Senate Bill 100. That said, Dan is correct that there are more restrictions with respect to scenery and cultural resources in the National Scenic Area.
Thank you. Sure. Question number two I have on the city limits. You say it was difficult to get the city limits. Could we not have done the GIS, got a disc from the city, and download that into our program? Because the city should know where its boundaries are.
That's right. And we couldn't do that in 1986 because, of course, GIS, GPS did not exist. So the problem was in 1986, as Director Volniakowski said, the boundaries were drawn with a magic marker. That magic marker on the ground was maybe 100 feet. So we weren't able to have the precision until GPS, GIS came on board. So we just completed.
Well, maybe I misunderstood. I thought you were talking about currently.
Currently, we have used GPS and GIS, but okay. We couldn't. What I thought you meant was, why didn't we do that at the very beginning of the act?
Yeah, I know about that because I came from the city government. Permits on Klickitat. Why are we still doing permits for Klickitat. Why doesn't Klickitat do their own thing? I mean, why is everyone else funding that?
That's my question. Representative Esquivel, members of the committee, that is a good question. We have been working very closely with Klickitat County. They have they've never embraced the National Scenic Area Act. However, last biennium, they did actually receive a special grant to hire a planner to come work with the Gorge Commission, so that we had someone representing Klickitat County in our office for the first year and a half, who really helped us catch up on a lot of the permit backlog that we had. That planner was very instrumental in doing a lot of the background staff work, but ultimately, without them adopting the ordinance, we still have the permit authority. And so it was helpful to us to have an extra pair of hands, you know, a professional planner to do a lot of the background work. But we still had to write the staff reports, and I still had to sign off on any permit applications. We are trying to develop better relationships with them so that they would see that, you know, it's in their best interest to adopt the ordinance. In addition to that, they have not been able to access any of that Washington Investment Board funding, because that was only restricted to those counties that adopted the ordinance. So they never had the advantage of any of the loans or grants. But they still have not adopted the ordinance. So we will just keep working with them and hope at some point that they will adopt it, and then we will not need to use our resources for being a permit agency for that county.
I think that if I were Klickitat and you were doing the work for me but talking to me all the time and I kept rope-a-doping you, I'd let you continue to do the work.
Especially when the economic development funds that went to Skamania County to build Skamania Lodge or went to Wasco County to build the Discovery Center are no longer available.
Maybe they don't care.
And Representative Esquivel, they still process land use permits for their applications within the scenic area that are county, so they are creating a dual application process for their constituents. They still do their county land use, which the applicant has to meet whatever county rules they have, but then they have to apply to the Gorge Commission to meet Gorge Commission rules. And there's actually one case where an applicant got a permit from the Gorge Commission and failed to meet the county rules and was denied their application. So it makes no sense at all for them to not adopt, because they are spending the money to do a land use application process. It's just not meeting the scenic area standards, it's meeting their own.
Now, for my last question, I'd like you to back up to your KPMs on your program. There we go. Now, am I correct to assume, and I want to make sure, like number three there, you say it targets 75%, actual 71%. 71% of 75%?
No.
Or 71% of 100%, and why would we set a target at 75%?
Well, Representative Esquivel, members of the subcommittee, these targets were set a few years ago. And I think that my target would be 100%, but the 71% was based on questionnaires and survey results from applicants. And so we've been gathering up those when we had to do our performance measures evaluation for this biennium. I think the reason 75% was established it was before I became the director, but I think it was established because knowing that not everyone is going to be completely happy with the decisions that we make and may not feel our customer service is the best, so that's how that number was established. But I'm hoping that as we move forward that we will hit 100%.
I would think that we'd want to have 100% and strive for that on everything, not just, I mean, like percentage of total best practices met by the board, you have 80%. Who made that one up?
I apologize. I don't know the answer to that. It was
and they
before
would,
my
they
time.
Wouldn't stand up and say so either, would they?
Okay.
I'm just curious, that's all.
Mr. Chair,
thank
it's
you.
Probably me.
Oh, no one? Okay, now we know. Okay, Rocco.
And it's excused.
Thank you. We're in questions.
We're in questions. Additional questions or comments for the panel? I'm not seeing any. Thank you all very, very much. Appreciate it.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you very much.
And now, if we could have Kathy Connolly, please.
Co-Chair Witt, members of the committee, I'm Kathy Connolly with the Chief Financial Office, here to give you a brief overview of the governor's budget, the agencies discussed with you their mission and the emerging issues that they are facing, and I believe the governor's budget seeks to address those very challenging issues of staff capacity and the commissioner time and energy devoted to increasing issues. This is the usual expenditure history, and I would just ask you to remember two things. This is actually really half their budget, roughly half their budget, because of Washington paying the other half. And the FTE, these are Washington FTE. We have no FTE for this agency in the Oregon budget. This is the usual expenditure category, and the reason the services and supplies are so large is because we are invoiced by Washington on a quarterly basis with backup, and then we pay for the staff and other requirements of the agency that way. The personal services you see is all the commissioner personal services, so it's really just per diem and other personal expenses. This is by expenditures, so again, joint expenditures. This is part that we share with Washington. The green part is the all of the Oregon commissioner expenses are personal services and supplies. I did want to talk a little bit about the commissioner expenses. As Mr. Rocco indicated, we are always trying to balance with Washington as we develop the budget. And when we did current service level with Washington, we do it not exactly the same. But at that point, for 17-19, their commissioner expenses were about $32,000. Ours were $22,000. So Package 101 is an attempt to try and even up those commissioner expenses. For both sides of the commission, and those are the ones that are not joint. We can set them differently than Washington, but that's what Package 101 tries to do. We also did our normal statewide adjustment. In addition to the POPs that the agency's already talked to you about, we did our usual statewide adjustments. There is a Package 80 in their budget, which were changes that the legislature made in the February session, and Package 80 makes them permanent going forward. And I did want to note that we did not make any general fund reductions in this agency. This agency is funded totally with general funds, but it was very small, and so the governor's budget did not make any reductions in this agency. And with that, unless there are other questions, I am done.
Thank you. Anything from the subcommittee? All right. Thank you both very much.
Thank you.
All right. I'm going to take some comments from the public on Senate Bill 5510 and signed up. I have Louis Pett. If you come forward, please, sir. And Peggy Lynch, would you come forward as well? Good afternoon. Record,
hello, Louis Pitt. I'm Director of Government Affairs and Planning for the Confederated Tribes of Warm Springs, and we're a fellow government. I guess the whys, we support the budget and the possible, hopefully, the increase of the budget to have a liaison. One of the big whys is that since we've been here since time immemorial is that we reserved for ourselves, the Warm Springs tribes reserved these off-reservation rights. And those rights are fishing and hunting and using the gorge resources of the water, the land, the plants, the fish, of course, and off-reservation rights is what we have. So we're always looking for plans that are transparent, that have a professional working team, and that are open to the idea of working with the tribes with our rights that we have even today. Senator, the late great Senator Hatfield, worked very well with our two treaty chiefs. We have three tribes, Warm Springs, Wasco, and Paiute, and the two river chiefs of the Wasco and the Warm Springs, friends of the late senator. And so they got together, and what do you need down here in the gorge is pretty much the question as well. We got our way of life that we need to be protected, and that's won cases. There's like 25 federal court cases we won for the right to have fish. It used to be just a fish, and they said, no, we more than that. We want fish in the net, the right to have fish. And habitats here recently with the state of Washington culvert case was clarified for environment. So we have a real strong legal standing with the in the gorge. And the Gorge Act did, I showed to Chairman Blair, a letter from 1986 that our Wasco chief said at the Washington, D.C. hearing in 86 to the Senate Appropriations Committee, and pretty much talked about the vision. And we've done very well with that vision, and still at it. And time goes on. We're not going away. You're not going away. So we really need help to protect our way of life. I have served as a Gorge Commissioner for 9 years through three governors, Governor Roberts and Kitzhaber and Kulongowski. So I always kid folks, the Gorge Commissioners, I'm fully recovered from that experience. So it is what the land use approach that the Gorge Commission plan takes is something that, as Chairman Blair talked to about Oregon's way of thinking about how to really handle the balancing act of growth and protection. You know, our way of life in Oregon, we love it. Well, how do we go about protecting that but still allowing a certain amount of development? Well, we bought into, Warm Springs bought into the idea of using, because that's the same type of approach we take. We will protect somebody's development as long as they protect the elements of our way of life in their area. Can be different, you know, because of the nature of the resources and that, and that requires us working with them. So we supported the act. We supported the planning effort. We four tribes of the, there's four treaty tribes in the gorge, and that's the Warm Springs, Yakima, Umatilla, and Nez Perce. And all four tribes worked to come up with a process that allowed the tribes to have some say in how we protect those elements, not just cultural resources, but habitats that are connected to the other resources, fishing and gathering roots, berries, and things like that. So it manifested itself, and we're still watching it and seeing how it's all going to work. So anyway, the problems I have these days is, of course, is slowing down a little here in my golden years, as they call it. And I don't know what's so golden about it, but
I agree with that.
And so it's a thing where, yeah, we need help in Indian country. And the Gorge Commission staff are professionals. They've always dealt with us professionally and taken the time to go the extra mile to help us understand certain issues. And so I feel like that extra funding for the tribal person. And then there's always a question in planning. It's, I think, same thing as you have in government. How do you know how you're doing? So just a simple question, how are we doing? Vital statistics project is a tool to do that. And so support that as I sit back and watch the gorge. We had a public review meeting where I attended, and I told my bosses at home, I says, yeah, well, I heard, I think, an adequate amount of whining from all of the different users. That's good. So everybody felt, you know, what it takes to protect your way of life. And, you know, Oregon's got, what, 4 million people now. Wow. How much more are we going to have? And I worked with the Deschutes River. Same thing there was, what was the problem with Lower Deschutes? We were loving it to death. Just way too many people all over the place, wrong areas. So we started working, and still today, still helping, using all the tools that we have to help protect you know, our beautiful God-given gifts that we look at. So make it clear. I have to get a letter of support later. I'm kind of on one of those asking for forgiveness when I go home rather than I got some approval to be here. But we will get you a letter, official letter from the Confederated Tribes of Warm Springs with the support for, I think, the increase and definitely that position. And how are we doing is these guys, Christina has been, I think, a real asset. New leadership's got a lot of skills to be able to work with different type of government entities, and so we're one of them. So, you know, 4 tribes, 6 counties, 13 urban areas, and a whole bunch of different users out there. Is that I'm just curious to see how it all turns out, and I'm hoping it turns out for the best because the gorge really is a beautiful area. So, thank you.
Thank you very much, Louis. Certainly appreciate your own input, that from the tribe, and informed as it is by your having been a former commissioner is very valuable. Thank you for making the trip over here today.
You bet. Thank you.
Peggy, welcome.
Thank you. For the record, Peggy Lynch, League of Women Voters of Oregon. The League has supported the Seating Act since its inception. We even had a member of the League who has served on the commission in the past. I can't be more eloquent than my fellow panelists, so I don't think I will do that. I want to bring a few things to your attention, the issues related to climate change, to the wildfire situation and urban wildland interface issues around those cities that are increasing in population, and yet we know, and you heard the, and you saw the Mosier fire and how we were very lucky not to have had wind that day. The pressure of nearby large populations on this wonderful treasure, we need to recognize and make sure it happens. We are supportive of House Bill 2131 related to oil train management, making sure that in Oregon we have the management that we need to be able to address future crises such as that. I want to point out, as I have in the past, KPM, in this case, KPM number 2. 75% of the permits are supposed to happen in a timely manner, and the number is 30%. So it seems to me that if 75% is your goal, and those are KPMs that you set, then it makes for the argument for at least that additional planner to help increase that number. So with that, I know you have other people who want to testify. I just want you to say that we certainly support this budget, and we'll look forward to working with you and in however we can to make sure this happens.
Thank you very much. Representative Esquivel.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chair. Sir, just for a heads up, they're trying to do some things on the upper Deschutes. Are you aware of what's going on between Sun River and Bend on the Deschutes? That they want to put in some bridges, which it's Scenic River, which is a no-no, and then they're trying to give access up and down that river. And it's come right back to the classic example you just explained. You love it to death.
Yeah. Well, Chairman, Representative Esquivel. The tribe is always, we have our spies out there. We have, we work with environmental groups and development groups too, and so we are keeping an eye on that. Our natural resources department, yes, is, I think we did shut down one bridge. We're probably a part, one of the 10 people that said no to the idea of one of the bridges in that same area. So, yeah, we're keeping an eye on it, and we depend greatly on the water that comes down. We actually have, we take out our domestic water, drinking water, out of the Deschutes. So we watch the farming practices as well as any other practice that could affect quantity and quality of our water. So we got our eye on it.
Good. Mr. Chair, very quickly, I had forgotten one last thing, economic vitality. You all need to know that Hood River's unemployment rate is about the same as the Portland area. So there has been exciting things happening in the Gorge, and they have figured out how to do it within the confines and with the work of this scenic area as well. So it needs to go on the record that they actually have a great deal of economic vitality going on in the Gorge area. Thank you.
Very good. Right. Anything else from the subcommittee? Thank you both very, very
Thank
much.
You.
Call forward now, please. Tom Wolf and Bob Olson.
Chair
Good afternoon.
Witt. Good afternoon, Chair Witt, committee members. I'm Bob Olson. I'm here on behalf of Friends of the Gorge today. As you may know, the Friends of the Gorge is a nonprofit group with 6,000 members dedicated to protecting the scenic beauty and natural cultural heritage of the Columbia River Gorge. I'm going to kind of briefly summarize my comments. We've submitted testimony, and it's much longer than what I plan to say today.
And Bob and Tom both, I really will appreciate brevity, given that we've got a total of 5 minutes left, so thanks very much. You guys are professionals. Yeah. I know you can do it.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Chair. For the Friends of the Gorge, an important related priority to the things you've heard about today is improving rail safety in the Gorge. And there are two bills in the House Environment and Energy Committee, House Bill 2131 and 3344, that both have concepts in them that are being worked on by the committee and would advance the cause of improving rail safety. And this relates because I think one of the main things the commission has been hearing about as it's had its meetings on the master plan is the fact that people are very concerned about the rail issues and wanting the state and the local entities to do more on that issue. So that keeps coming up. We've already discussed the current budget. It's slightly more than what has occurred before. This is a step in the right direction to hire an additional planner, but the commission is in dire need of additional planners and administrative staff, and this is one of the things we'd like to work with you as we finalize the budget process this cycle. And it's certainly up to the this committee has a role in helping to maintain and enhance our special places in Oregon, and the Gorge is one of those places, and we want to cooperate with you on that. The final point I wanted to mention, if you ever wanted to hear more about the history, which is fascinating, of the political creation during the Reagan administration of the Gorge Act, there's a book called The Great Divide by Durbin. Just a really interesting book that talks about all the things that the different people that were involved did. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Very good. Thank you very much, Bob.
Chair Witt, House committee members, for the record, my name is Tom Wolf of the Trout Unlimited. And again, you know how many members we have, so I won't go into that part.
155,000.
Yeah. See? Boy, I'm going to have to start slipping you money. Just kidding.
Don't do it.
But Real quick, you have my written testimony. I just want to mention two new words. I taught you smultification earlier, which actually is a true term.
It is.
Now I want to teach you the term thermal refuge. Thermal refuge refers to cold water coming into warmer water that provides a place for fish to take refuge from the hotter water. The gorge is very important for that. As the Columbia, a lot of times above Bonneville and the other dams, warms up past 70 degrees during the summer, it's very lethal for salmon returning. The cold water from the gorge streams like Herman Creek, Eagle Creek, the Hood River provide thermal refuge. You can sometimes find pods of thousands of salmon in those estuaries from those creeks during the summer, waiting for the water to cool down so they can venture upstream. Whereas the Gorge Commission does not have actual authority over that, what they do provides a veneer of authority. They work with development, they work with agencies, and I think overall they help provide protection for those thermal refuges, as not only as we're facing the growth of the gorge, but of loving areas to death. So we encourage that the Gorge Commission be giving fully what they want as they continue to protect those areas, not only for people, but for the wild fish that we all care so much about. Thanks.
Thank you very much. Anything very quickly for either of these two? Yes, seeing and hearing none. Gentlemen, thank you very much. Smultification, thermal refuge, and spies. Folks, you heard it here first today. I'm closing the public hearing on Senate Bill 5510 and adjourning the committee. Thank you all. Bill 5510 and adjourning the committee. Thank you all. Public hearing on